This is Taking Aim with
Rav Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, Obama's Real Mandate, Preserving Capitalism. U.S. President-elect Barack Obama held a press conference in Chicago to announce selections of his economic team. Most importantly was his statement that he would do, quote, whatever is required to stabilize the financial system. What did he mean? He warned of cuts to social spending. He warned, quote, we'll have to scour our federal budget line by line and make meaningful cuts and sacrifices as well. End quote. What does this mean for you and for me as we suffer, as our payroll goes down, as the value of our homes, as the value of our pensions, as the value of our savings go down? What does this actually mean? Who is Barack Obama serving? You, me, as millions of people across the country expected? Or is he serving the rulers, the financial interests of the United States, the Wall Street interests, as some have said? Today on Taking Aim, we will discuss Barack Obama's selections for his economic team and for the imperial conquest of the United States. Barack Obama's team and the impact of this on each and every one of us in the United States. Let us go to an article by Mark Pittman and Bob Ivory. U.S. pledges top $7.7 trillion to ease frozen credit. Ease frozen credit or subsidize the ruling class of the United States? As this article in Bloomberg, November 24th, states, the U.S. government is prepared to provide more than $7.76 trillion on behalf of American taxpayers after guaranteeing $306 billion of Citigroup, Inc. debt yesterday. The pledges, amounting to half the value of everything produced in the nation last year, and I repeat, these pledges amount to half the value of all the goods and services produced in the United States in 2007, are intended to rescue the financial system after the credit market seized up 15 months ago. The unprecedented pledge of funds includes $3.18 trillion already tapped by financial institutions in the biggest response to an economic emergency since the New Deal of the 1930s, according to data compiled by Bloomberg. The commitment dwarfs the plan approved by lawmakers, the Treasury Department's $700 billion Troubled Asset Relief Program, called TARP. The Federal Reserve lending last week was 1,900 times the weekly average for the 3 years before the crisis. To put this in a context that each of us would understand, this huge bailout for the ruling class, which is put forward as if it's a bailout of the people for the people of the United States, this amount of money would pay the mortgages of half of every U.S. citizen in the United States. That is, half of the mortgages, half of us would have no mortgage if this money was brought to the people of the United States. Or if we look at the value of what this money would do for education and the infrastructure of the United States to ease the poverty of so many millions of people, the hunger of children throughout the United States, you put this into context. $7.7 trillion, which they say is on behalf of American taxpayers, but which we will show today on Taking Aim, and what we have shown throughout the years, is really for the benefit of the ruling rich. Ralph?
This article, brothers and sisters, in Bloomberg, by Mark Pittman and Bob Ivory, is an extremely important article because, unlike much of the reporting, it does not give fake statistics. It does not give the facade statistics. Here's the summary of the assessment on the part of Bloomberg in this report. The worst financial crisis in generations has erased $23 trillion, 38% of the value of the world's companies, and it has brought down three of the largest Wall Street firms. And I think that clarifies for us what the agenda of Barack Obama is. Who was he? How did this figure, in four short years, emerge from a state senator to become president of the United States? Not through charisma, not through the appeal of his rhetoric, but because he was financed, selected, vetted, cleared by the top figures of Wall Street, the financial circles, and those in the Council on Foreign Relations and other think tanks of the ruling class who are in the business of selecting political figures who can sell the agenda of the ruling class and enlist the population in acquiescence to this agenda out of the illusion that somehow they have an interest in the outcome. The realities are, as the article makes clear, when Congress approved the TARP, the Troubled Asset Relief Program, on October 3rd, Federal Chairman Ben Bernanke and Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson stated that there was a need for transparency and oversight. But as the Bloomberg article stipulates, regulators have committed far more money than ever was acknowledged, and they refuse to disclose who are the loan recipients. They refuse to disclose what is the collateral that they are taking in return. They refuse to disclose what will be done with the money that they are handing out. This is all secret. Quote, whether it's lending or spending, it's citizens' taxpayers that are going out the window. We end up holding collateral we don't know anything about, Bloomberg quotes Congressman Scott Garrett of New Jersey, who serves on the House Financial Services Committee. Quote, the time has come that we consider some sort of limitations to be placed on the Fed so that authority returns to elected officials as opposed to appointed ones. The elected officials have been provided with no information about who gets the money, what's being done with the money, what sustains or collateralizes the money, and the numbers shift every time you read the newspaper. $7.76 trillion, New Bloomberg News has disclosed.
And remember, Bloomberg represents the financial interests of the United States. It is a financial reporting news service. And when we have the captains of capital calling out an alarm, we know that it is a deeper problem than is even being presented. It is such a problem that Bloomberg has filed for a Freedom of Information Act report from the federal government.
They've started a lawsuit, Maya. Bloomberg has initiated a lawsuit to compel the government and Bernanke and Paulson to disclose.
Now let's look at how this money breaks down. The bailout includes a federal program to buy as much as $2.4 trillion in short-term notes. This is what is known as commercial paper that companies use to pay their bills. In other words, they're borrowing from the banks and financial institutions on a short-term basis, and the amount is $2.4 trillion that the Fed program is going to buy back in order to ensure that this short-term capital keeps flowing. That began October 27th. $1.4 trillion from the FDIC, that's the Federal Deposit and Insurance Corporation, to guarantee bank-to-bank loans. That is the money that banks lend to each other to keep their coffers filled so that they can then lend out the short-term notes and mortgages. And that started October 14th. And William Poole, the former president of the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis, said that these two programs were unlikely to lose money, so he says. But he says the bigger risk comes from rescuing the companies perceived as too big to fail. That's his concept but it is to be seen whether or not this money that the Fed is going to be lending out is going to be recouped. Ralph.
Well, the Bloomberg report makes clear that there isn't a snowball's chance in hell that penny one will be recouped. Quote, the Dow Jones Industrial Average through Friday has dropped 38% since the beginning of the year and 43% since October 9, 2007. The S&P 500 fell 45% from the beginning of the year, 49% from October 9, 2007. The Nikkei 225 index has fallen 46% from the beginning of the year and 57% from its most recent peak of July 9, 2007 at 18,261. We're now at 7,000, from 18,000 down to 7,000. Goldman Sachs is down 78% from its peak, 75% in this year alone. That is not a recession, brothers and sisters. That is a wholesale collapse of the financial order.
It's a free fall.
There is no end in sight. Most of the spending programs were run out of the New York Fed. Who was the head of the New York Fed? Timothy Geithner, the Wall Street insider, the collusive figure who has facilitated the rapine disappearance of $23 trillion, 38% of the value of the world's companies. And what does Barack Obama do? He appoints this figure, Timothy Geithner, as his Treasury Secretary. The very architects of the financial collapse, the very figures involved in the wholesale looting, are now being placed in charge of the entire financial apparatus of governments by Barack Obama. The money that's been pledged is equivalent to $24,000 for every man, woman, and child in the country. It's nine times what the United States has spent officially on the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, according to the Congressional Budget Office. It is, as Maya had indicated, it could pay off over half the country's mortgages. What does the chief monetary economist at Vineland, New Jersey's Cumberland Advisors, Inc., an insider's financial advisory, who's been an economist for the Fed for 10 years, it's unprecedented. And the backlash has begun already. Congress is taking hits from their constituents because they got snookered. A lot of supposedly smart people who look to be totally incompetent. And now we all see it's going to fall on the taxpayer. Unquote, Bob Eisenbeis, chief monetary consultant, economist, at Vineland, New Jersey. Maya.
Yes, I wanted to go back to how the $7.7 trillion is being apportioned. I had mentioned before there's $2.4 trillion in short-term notes, and now there was the $24 billion that everyone will recall that was used to engineer the takeover in March of Bear Stearns by the humongous J.P. Morgan Chase & Company, a gift to J.P. Morgan, since the Fed was propping up the bad loans and J.P. Morgan was getting all the benefits of Bear Stearns, which had many good assets. The $122.8 billion, in addition to the TARP allocations that were used to bail out the New York-based American International Group, Inc., one of the world's largest insurers, again, an institution that had assets that were failing and then many assets that were successful, and the Fed was propping up the bad assets and helping them sell them off so that they wouldn't have losses on their books. Citigroup, again, humongous. And most importantly, Citigroup, Robert Rubin, former Treasury Secretary during the Clinton era, and a major advisor to Barack Obama. And we should note that most of the economic leaders for the Barack Obama presidency are the proteges of Robert Rubin. Robert Rubin, Citigroup, received $306 billion of government guarantees for its troubled mortgages and what are called toxic assets, in other words, the failing assets. And it's $306 billion. And what we're told is that this is just the beginning. The Treasury Department is also going to inject another $20 billion into the bank after its stock fell 60% last week. Think about this. Here you have the captains of capital running rampant, doing whatever they want with their speculative investments. And then the U.S. government comes to you and me, who work hard for every single penny and dollar that we earn, and asking us to prop up the captains of capital and saying that if we don't, then the ability of us to have any job is going to go away. This doesn't make sense. The call is not to nationalize these institutions so that they serve for our benefit. No, the call is to prop up the captains of capital at our expense. Ralph?
Well, it's a kleptocracy. It is the essence of capitalism. When the crisis of the 1930s unfolded and 10,000 banks failed and there was no mechanism to bolster them with cash, the only rival to the government's current response in terms of the underwriting of capitalism can be found today. And what is going on today dwarfs by comparative percentage what the New Deal attempted to do for finance capital at the time. This is the worst capital markets crisis in history, stated Ethan Harris, co-head of the U.S. Economic Research at Barclays Capital, Inc., the economist at the New York Fed. And these are the insiders, the very articulators of this entire fictive capital boondoggle, who are now calling it by its name, the worst capital markets crisis in history. And so you have, he said, the biggest intervention in modern history. And that is what underlies the lawsuit filed by Bloomberg, a federal lawsuit against the central bank seeking to force disclosure of the borrowing banks, what they're doing with the money, what, if any, collateral has been put up. Some have asked us to reveal the names of the banks that are borrowing and how much they are borrowing and what collateral they are posting, Bernanke said on November 18th to the House Financial Services Committee. We think that's counterproductive. We don't think you have the need or the right to that information. Do you know what Bernanke is saying to the House Finance Committee? He said, look at my hand. You see where my middle finger is? That's my response to you. The Fed should account for the collateral it takes in exchange for these fortunes, said Paul Casriel, the chief economist at Chicago's Northern Trust Corp. There is a lack of transparency, he says. Given that the Fed is taking on this enormous credit risk, it would seem that the taxpayers are entitled to some transparency, Casriel said. Bernanke's Fed is responsible for $4.474 trillion of pledges, 61% of the total commitment of the $7.76 trillion that have been compiled as data by Bloomberg concerning the exposé as to what this bailout represents. Bloomberg has identified $4.74 trillion that Bernanke has overseen handing out in pledges. And the Bloomberg article states, too often the public is focused on the wrong piece of the number, the $700 billion that Congress approved, said J.D. Foster, staff member of the Council on Economic Advisors and a senior fellow at the Heritage Foundation. It's vastly larger than that, he says. In the 3 years before the crisis, such average weekly borrowing by banks was $48 million. What do you think it was last week? Not $48 million, $91.5 billion. 1 week, $91.5 billion. There's no limit to this absolute pillage, rapine pillage of the entire financial apparatus of the United States government, which translates into what? Indebtedness for the taxpayer, burdens for the working American. Because it's not merely that no money is going to be allowed or available for the elementary needs of people, let alone an infrastructure rehabilitation, but on the contrary, whatever funds that are to hand are being handed out to the captains of capital. The failure of the second securities firm, Lehman Brothers Holding and Inc., led to the creation of the Commercial Paper Funding Facility, the Money Market Investor Funding Facility. It's called MMIFF. These two programs pledged $2.3 trillion alone. Certificates of deposit, commercial paper, treasury bills. They're just handing out trillions of dollars, and it's Bloomberg Press that's setting it all out here, brothers and sisters.
Ralph, the three financial firms were Bear Stearns, as we mentioned before, the venerable financial investment house started before the Great Depression, a very long-standing financial house, one of the bulwarks of the American financial investment industry. And Lehman Brothers, which the U.S. government allowed to fall into bankruptcy. And the third is Merrill Lynch, another long-term financial house that went through many changes throughout the years. Merrill Lynch, Pierce, Fenner, and Smith, and then other names until it finally shortened itself to Merrill Lynch. And that was on the verge of bankruptcy when Bank of America took it over. So we have Bear Stearns taken over by J.P. Morgan Chase at the behest of the federal government, the arrangement there, and then Merrill Lynch taken over by Bank of America, moving from banking into financial services ever more so. Linking up, we have here banks and investment houses, something that started during the Clinton administration when the very important Depression-era legislation that was created to prevent the intertwining of banks and Wall Street was eliminated. And then we had, as a result of that, the huge speculative uprising that took place within the banking industry and that has led partially to the collapse of so many banks, along with the speculative bubble that went on with mortgages and the fake mortgages that were released with the subprime mortgages. In other words, mortgages that brought lots of investment to the banks and mortgage companies, but which people themselves couldn't sustain, especially as they were losing their jobs with the depressing of the economy. I want to point out, Ralph, that Bloomberg itself is pursuing this because Bloomberg relies on its news reporting in the financial services, and it needs to give advice to people about how they should make their investments, and they are concerned. Are people going to say, okay, the market has hit a bottom, this is a time to come in and buy, and then find that it's going to go even lower and their investments are going to be lost? In other words, Bloomberg is saying people can't make wise investments without information. And what we have is the U.S. Congress gave Paulson and Bernanke the absolute power to be doing what they're doing. It was the Congress itself that passed legislation, as they were pressured over a weekend to do so, to give Bernanke and Paulson the right to manipulate the financial markets and to be spending the $7.7 trillion without accountability. Ralph?
Bernanke and Paulson, former chief executive officer of Goldman Sachs, have also promised over $200 billion to shore up Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, a pledge that hasn't been allocated to any agency. The FBIC arranged for another $139 billion in loan guarantees for General Electric Company's finance unit. And the Bloomberg article continues, but all of this does not include the money to General Motors, Ford Motor Company, and Chrysler LLC. And Obama has said he favors financial assistance to keep them from collapse. And Paulson told the House Financial Services Committee on November 18th that the $250 billion already allocated to banks through the TARP is an investment, not an expenditure. What does that mean? Quote, I think it will be extraordinarily unusual if that money gets back, quote unquote. In his November 18th testimony, Bernanke told the House Financial Services Committee the central bank wouldn't lose money. But what does it really come to? Bloomberg's article reveals what they call a haircut, the practice of lending less money than the collateral's current market value. So consequently, there isn't a snowball's chance in hell that they're going to recover these funds, as Bloomberg is very emphatically pointing out. Here is a piece by Nicholas von Hoffman of The Nation. The Nation, which is mewling in its celebration of Obama. But here's Hoffman's article. $2 trillion handed out by Paulson and Bernanke. But who got it? Nobody knows. The fox and the hounds have a clear idea of what they want to do and how they want to do it, which is more than you can say of Paulson. Sums of incalculable size are being spent and pledged by Paulson and his playmate, Ben Bernanke, the Nicholas von Hoffman article continues. Bernanke, chairman of the Fed, Federal Reserve Board. Nobody outside their organization, and maybe inside these organizations either, knows who got what, how much they got, under what conditions they got it. In the past couple of months, von Hoffman states, Bernanke has loaned out $2 trillion, but to unnamed companies under 11 different programs. They were all slapped together in the past 15 months of financial crisis. To repeat, he writes, we do not know who got this money, what collateral was put up in return for the loans, what conditions are attached to them. The sums involved are three times as large as Paulson's $700 billion, which muddled bailout efforts that Congress voted for last month. And Bernanke, von Hoffman states, doesn't even have the legal authority to pass out these trillions without congressional authorization and explanation. But nobody's had either. Secrecy breeds suspicion and loss of confidence, says von Hoffman in the understatement of the year. Quote, these officials preface every speech talking about transparency, their favorite word. At the same time, they are handing off trillions of dollars, $2 trillion at a go, and they won't say to whom. Paulson made off with $50 billion to give the AIG for the purpose of setting up a special entity by which the company's lousiest loans are to be kept off the books and the unknown debtors protected. This is again von Hoffman writing. When asked about this, Linnie Turner, who sits on the Treasury Department's Advisory Committee on the Auditing Profession, complained, we've had way too many things here that nobody knows anything about. No one has faith in the capital markets, quote unquote. Paulson has given away, loaned or lost, $300 billion of the first $700 billion Congress gave him, and he's lost more than money. No one believes him or Bernanke on anything anymore, writes von Hoffman. I mean, think about what we're reading here, brothers and sisters. An acknowledgement that they steal this money. They don't account for this money. And they refused, with a smirk on their face, to give out any information whatsoever about the disposition of the funds. Every day, von Hoffman, another company steps forward with its hand out. American Express, Chrysler, GE Financial. Every day, it appears Paulson and Bernanke are accommodating these corporate mendicants. Paulson left his job as what? As CEO of Goldman Sachs, collapsing Goldman Sachs and recipient of these kinds of funds. Paulson left to become Treasury Secretary. By now it may be dawning on him that CEOship is no substitute for an apprenticeship in public service that might give him political skills that he lacks, and the same can be said of Bernanke. These men are doctrinaire free marketeers, he writes. They hate supervising any intervention in American business. Both principals are trying to devise and carry out programs they don't believe in. They can't have spent any time thinking about how government might regulate and intervene successfully when they're just handing the money out and refusing to disclose who gets it, what it's for, how it will be recovered, anything. That's the Bloomberg Press, and the columnist for the New York Times, Nicholas von Hoffman.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, Obama's Real Mandate, Preserving Capitalism. Ralph?
Obama holds press conference and promises whatever is required for Wall Street. On Monday, U.S. President-elect Barack Obama, this is an article by Tom Ellie on the 25th of November in World Socialist website, held a press conference in Chicago to announce selections for his, quote, economic team. The 26-minute press conference was intended to reassure investors that his administration will defend the interests of Wall Street. Obama repeated five times the formulation, I will do whatever is required to stabilize the financial system. At the same time, he warned of cuts to social spending. Quote, to make the investments we need, we have to scour our federal budget line by line and make meaningful cuts and sacrifices. So $7.7 trillion to the financial capital and the captains of capital. The class character of the Obama administration was further underscored by two key appointments. Timothy Geithner, head of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, the Treasury Secretary of Obama. Lawrence Summers, former Treasury Secretary under Bill Clinton, to head up the National Economic Council. Who are these people? They are Wall Street, Washington insiders. Their careers are spent entirely in defending the interests of the American financial elite. Let's look at the Obama economic team. He offers no criticism of the financial industry. My commitment is to do what is required so our financial system works. President Bush has indicated that he has the same approach and the same attitude, Obama continues. President Bush and I are united in making sure that the financial system works and operates the way it needs to. Want it more explicit than that? President Bush and Obama, lockstep, arm in arm, united in their perspective on seeing that the financial system operates the way it needs to. Maya?
Charles Schumer, chairman of the Congressional Joint Economic Committee, on ABC News this week, announced that the stimulus package would be between $500 and $700 billion. This is the so-called stimulus program that Barack Obama says will create 2.5 million jobs. Where these 2.5 million jobs are going to be created within 2 years, he doesn't say. And where he's going to get $500 to $700 billion, is this because he's going to cut back on social service programs? And is this on top of the $7.7 trillion that we've been talking about that's going to the financial services industry? Look at what it means, 2.5 million jobs within 2 years. During the first 10 months of 2008, the U.S. economy shed 1.2 million jobs alone. Nearly 250,000 jobs were lost in October. That's one-tenth of what Barack Obama's two-year projection for job creation would amount to. So when he talks about 2.5 million jobs, he doesn't specify, no specifics about how this would take place, nor where is this $500 to $7 billion coming from on top of the trillions of dollars that have already been shunted towards Wall Street. The only statement he makes is that he's going to scour the federal budget line by line and make meaningful cuts and sacrifices.
In social services.
We know what this means, as Ralph says. It has been through every administration, social services. And when we speak further about his economic team, we see that the very people that he is being, that he is proposing to put in place are the people involved in the reshaping of Social Security. That is the privatization of Social Security and cutting back on benefits, which means that you can't collect Social Security until you're older, which means you must work longer, and that the contributions to Social Security from your wages, that is because Social Security is as a pension fund, comes out of your wages each week, that this will increase and that the money that you will get at the end is also going to be less. So contribute more, make do with less, and don't collect until you're older. Ralph?
He talks vaguely about creating 2.5 million jobs within 2 years. He gives no specifics on how these jobs will be created. And even if we took it at its face value, this is a paltry goal because in the first 10 months of 2008, 1.2 million jobs were already shed. 250,000 jobs lost in October alone. So what is he talking about? He's not even going to get back to the threshold that was the story just in the immediate moment prior to this collapse. It's soft soap. Bernanke stated, "I spoke this morning with President Bush and Federal Chief Ben Bernanke." And he says he solidarizes himself with their decision to rescue Citibank, which will cost upwards of $300 billion. Then Bush indicated, "I discussed the Citigroup bailout with Barack Obama. I told the president-elect when I first met him, anytime we're to make a big decision during this transition, he will be informed, as will his team. It'll be done together." So what we're looking at here is an explicit collusion between the Bush people and the Obama people, because they're the same people. And then we have the pending bailout for the auto industry, but one that will shift the burden to the auto workers. Quote, "We should help the auto industry," Obama says, "but what we should expect is that any additional money is designed to assure a long-term, sustainable auto industry that's going to be competitive globally." You know what that means? Competitive globally? Well, the leading Democrats and Republicans have spelled it out. That means drastic layoffs, cuts in wages and benefits of the work of the workers.
Oh, Ralph, Rush Limbaugh made it quite clear in on his radio program when he stated that the real problem with the competitiveness of the American auto industry is the unions. And it's very clear that when they talk about this bailout of the auto industry and the problems are the benefits and the wages, they're talking about the unions themselves. The move is either have the complete collaboration of the unions, in other words, the unions being just the management of labor to keep labor peace. That's their role. They're the sergeant at arms. Or they're going to bust the unions completely. And that means the benefits that have been the long struggle of the workers and that lead the benefit situation for workers throughout the United States, organized and unorganized, they're going to break that. That is health benefits and pension benefits and all the wage benefits, the long and overtime benefits that have come to the auto workers where you have large-scale contract negotiation. And that's the real purpose. That is what the message is to the auto industry, and most of all, that's the message to the workers of the United States. Let's look at this economic team of Barack Obama. Timothy Geithner, of whom we've been speaking, it is going to be is called the principal architect behind the bailout of Bear Stearns, among other deals. That's what he's been touted as, being a great deal maker, even if he isn't somebody who was an economist. They say this is a man who's been grounded in the practical day-to-day workings of the financial industry. He began his career with Kissinger Associates, Inc. That's former Nixon Secretary of State Henry Kissinger, the great imperialist. Kissinger Associates is where he began his career in Washington, D.C. And this is true of many of the people who are now entering the Barack Obama cabinet and economic institutions and the other imperial institutions of the United States. He worked his way up in the Clinton administration under Secretary of Treasury and to be under Secretary of Treasury for International Affairs from 1998 until Clinton left office. And in that capacity, he worked under both Clinton secretaries, Robert Rubin and Lawrence Summers. And again, here's Lawrence Summers coming back into the Obama fold. Ralph?
Well, Maya, we have to be clear that Geithner was the principal architect behind the bailout of Bear Stearns, along with all the other deals. Geithner not only began his career with Kissinger Associates, as you indicated, but he was the policy director for the International Monetary Fund, overseeing all of the privatizations and the downsizing and the scrapping of social programs and the dictate to dependent, exploited countries. This is the mandate of imperialism. He was the senior fellow at the Council of Foreign Relations. Here's the financial elite's verdict on Geithner's selection. When the Obama people leaked word of his selection, the markets rallied, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average, which had been in free fall, climbed 494 points. Why? Geithner is considered, quote, Wall Street's man in the Obama administration. As for Summers, he played the critical role in designing Washington's response to the Mexican and Southeast Asian financial crises in 95 and 97, where the U.S. capital broke the currencies of Mexico and of Korea and in Southeast Asia and gobbled up the companies that they were able to grab at the first opportunity. He played, by the way, a very interesting role, did Summers, at Harvard, where he denounced students who protested Israeli policies, where he demanded the reintroduction of ROTC, reserve officer training, at Harvard. And eventually he resigned from his post after he stated that women had an impediment. They lacked an intrinsic aptitude that would enable them to do science and mathematics, you see. Their brains are not designed for science or mathematics, said the estimable Lawrence Summers. And now we find, Maya, that Obama is going to name Peter Orszag as director of the Office of Management and Budget. He was the senior fellow at the Brookings Institution and senior advisor on the Council of Economic Advisors. He is the advocate of, quote, revamping Social Security. And indeed, he has called for a privatizing approach to Social Security and predicted its total insolvency. Life expectancy, quote, has risen by 4 years for men and 5 years for women since 1940. So he says the benefits are not going to be there. So what does he call for? Cuts in Social Security payments to retirees. You have here the very figures of the ruling class, of the financial elite, that are engaged 24/7 in victimizing the poor, in slashing the social benefits that are granted them during moments when the system is under siege and it makes concessions. Those are being taken back. The New York Times article on Monday noted that Geithner, Summers, Orszag, and Furman, are all proteges of Robert Rubin. Quote, the advocacy of deregulation of financial institutions and markets has contributed to the current economic crisis. Rubin, the leading senior advisor of the policies adopted by Citigroup that led it to the brink of ruin. as Commerce Secretary, who will we have? Bill Richardson. Before he became governor of New Mexico, for whom did Richardson work? Why, Kissinger Associates, serving on the corporate boards of the energy corporations. These are not any, bear no resemblance or semblance to any single persona who would in any way be connected to the interests or needs of the working population. On the contrary, they are, in fact, the most relentless and ruthless, reliable hitmen for the very financial elite that is engaged in this rapine looting and are indeed the authors and the architects of the financial crisis that has swept our society. Maya, there is an important piece by Kate Randall on November 20th. Child hunger in the United States has risen by 50%. 36.2 million are hungry. Almost 700,000 of them small children. A rise of 50% over the previous year. 1 in 8 Americans overall are struggling to be able to feed themselves. And these statistics are all the more alarming since they do not reflect at all the impact of the current crisis. James Weil, the president of Food Research and Action, predicted that the 2000 numbers will be vastly larger. The increases in the number of hungry people will be very, very large, he says. You got the association here between the rapine financial looting and bailout in the trillions of dollars and the fate of our population, what it means for the poor, what it means for the hungry, what it means for the disadvantaged. Hunger and malnutrition are rampant. High levels of chronic illness, disease, anxiety, and depression. Uncertainty about the ability to provide adequate food, which is devastating for parents, is sweeping the United States. 1/3 of the households report that on occasion an adult did not eat for the entire day because there was not enough money for food. In 45% of the impoverished households, those who are listed as in poverty, an adult has lost weight because he or she could not afford food. Parents are going without so children can eat. These conditions of hunger for these households are ubiquitous in the United States. That is the meaning of this capitalist looting, and that is the gravamen of the crisis of capitalism and of imperialism, and the mandate served by Barack Obama.
Ralph, in our closing minutes, I want to return to the Bloomberg article of November 27th, because we spent a lot of time during this show on this article because of its significance, the significance being that the financial reporters are concerned about the lack of transparency because people then cannot make investment decisions. They don't know whether they should put their money under their mattresses or they should invest it. And the Financial Times has been amazing in its reporting, stating how worried the ruling class is about the direction of the U.S. government. Double Jeopardy for Financial Policymakers is a column by Wolfgang Munchau, and Wolfgang Munchau in the Financial Times, Monday, November 24th. And the pullout from the article, the bold headline that they do to grab you into reading it, says, Bernanke has already deployed his weapon of mass desperation while still some distance away from a zero interest rate, referring to the interest rate of the Federal Reserve policy, its chief instrument for policy before it had all these trillions of dollars to start giving to the banks. And it's been lowering the interest rate in order to stimulate borrowing credit markets. And what this article states most importantly, however, has to do with the housing market in the United States, which Munchau calls a potential time bomb. Until recently, most of the housing experts were content to predict a 25 to 30% fall in U.S. prices, peak to trough. Such a fall would bring prices back in line with the long-term trend. but this was before an expected mild downturn turned into a big recession and credit froze up. Under such conditions, one would expect housing prices to overshoot, say at least 10 to 20 percentage points beyond the trend line. So we may be talking about a peak-to-trough fall of 40 to 50% on average in nominal terms and more in real terms. Now, if you look at this, this means that many people are holding mortgages that are way beyond the value of their home. And they start to think and they say, we better walk away. Walk away means more foreclosures, more abandoned homes, and more failures on the bank's books. Think about this, what the people of the Financial Times are saying. Ralph?
The correlative of this service to the financial elite, the captains of capital, the authors of the crisis in which the system now finds itself, is the politics of imperial suppression and subjugation abroad and its equivalent at home. In our next show, we're going to go into this in detail, but right now, brothers and sisters, I want to take a moment to examine the Attorney General selected by Barack Obama, who liberal publications and liberal commentators have been celebrating as the first African-American to serve as the nation's top law enforcement article. Well, he's a little bit more than that. He is the architect of the presidential pardon given by Clinton to the billionaire fugitive investor Mark Rich, who, with whom did Mr. Holder collude and collaborate in protecting Rich? Why, Louis Scooter Libby, the chief of staff to Vice President Cheney, who is seeking his own end-of-term pardon from President Bush on felony convictions at the moment. As the senior advisor to the Democratic Party, the legal advisor, Holder was involved in the complicity of the Democratic Party with the police state measures enacted under the Bush administration, and he played a leading role in the reauthorization of the Patriot Act in 2005, for which Barack Obama also voted. But here is something particularly significant about the Attorney General-to-be of the United States. Eric H. Holder, the senior Clinton Justice Department official, had a very specific relationship to the death squads in Colombia. Yes, indeed. It was Eric Holder who was representing and acting for Chiquita Banana. He defended Chiquita Brands International, relating to the company's funneling money and weapons to the United Self-Defense Forces of Colombia, the AUC, the right-wing paramilitary organization which is on the U.S. State Department's list of terrorist organizations. An Organization of American States report showed that Chiquita in Colombia, its subsidiary Benedex, diverted weapons, including thousands of AK-47s from Nicaraguan government stocks to the AUC, the U.S.-trained death squads responsible for thousands of massacres of peasants throughout the Colombian countryside. At least 4,000 people killed by these death squads in the banana-growing region of Yoruba alone. The systematic use of assassination and murder and torture also was responsible for the forced displacement of hundreds of thousands of poor Colombians, a disproportionate amount of those, by the way, being black or indigenous. What is it that Malcolm said about a black face in a high place? Whether Barack Obama or Eric Holder? Hundreds of thousands of black Colombians, victims of these death squad operations, displaced, their homes destroyed, their family members gunned down. Not one Chiquita official was forced to serve time for these crimes. On the contrary, Holder continues to represent Chiquita in all the actions that have grown out of this case. But it doesn't stop at Chiquita. No, indeed. It's Coca-Cola. It's Dole. All of them involved, both Coke and Chiquita and Dole, in funding and subsidizing the death squads. As Dan Kovalik wrote in the Huffington Post, The major concern that emerges in a Justice Department led by Holder is that none of the allegations that Human Rights Watch had called breaking the grip, justice for the paramilitary mafias in Colombia, that none of this will ever be investigated. Why? Because Holder is deeply implicated in every step of it. As Dan Kovalik pointed out in the Huffington Post, one of the most notorious paramilitary leaders currently in federal custody in the U.S., Salvatore Mancuso, stated that he has extensive knowledge about Chiquita's relationship with the paramilitary death squads, as he has for Dole and Del Monte. Who represented them? Eric Holder. The Attorney General of the United States means the return of the death squads from Afghanistan to Africa, and we will be covering that issue and all its ramifications, because with the capitalist captains of capital, the rulers who are responsible for ripping off trillions of dollars, goes the death squad expression of imperialism. That is the agenda of Barack Obama. That's who his appointees are involved in preserving. It is the submission to the crisis of capitalism in its rapid decay at the expense of all of us. It's not just the dashing of hopes, but it's the dashing of the prospects of change that are the mandate and the mission of Barack Obama, brothers and sisters.
This has been Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, Obama's Real Mandate, Preserving Capitalism, will be on our website and our program archive. Visit it at www.takingaimradio.com. And please contact us at takingaim@pacbell, that's PACBELL.net. We'll be with you next week. Tatanta chinaparo tatanta filo ndo